the Holy Gospel according to Luke. As Jesus continued his journey to Jerusalem, he traveled through Samaria and Galilee. As he was entering a village, 10 lepers met him. They stood at a distance from him and raised their voices, saying, "Jesus, Master, have pity on us." And when he saw them, he said, "Go show yourselves to the priests." As they were going, they were cleansed. And one of them, realizing he had been healed, returned, glorifying God in a loud voice. And he fell at the feet of Jesus and thanked him. He was a Samaritan. Jesus said in reply, 10 were cleansed, were they not? Where are the other 9? Has none but this foreigner returned to give thanks to God?" Then he said to him, "Stand up and go. Your faith has saved you." The Gospel of the Lord. What is one of the first questions you ask someone when you first meet them? Well, after you learn their name, you usually ask, "Where are you from?" Right? Why do you ask that? Well, because as soon as you learn someone's hometown, you immediately assume lots of things about them. You assume you know them. If someone is from Fort Smith, for instance, you know that they're probably Razorback fans and don't come to Mass on Saturday evening. And they cheer for the St. Louis Cardinals. And they run through red lights at intersections. And they fly the rebel flag from the back of their pickup trucks. And they listen to 1980s rock music. And they walk around without their shirt on. And they're all related to each other. And they probably still hang people for capital offenses from Judge Parker's courthouse. I've only been here 3 years, so I'm sure my opinion will change about you soon. But you see what happens when you think you know people based on where they are from? You make gross generalizations that are often grossly wrong. Do you remember that great scene in the movie Casablanca where the German officer Major Heinrich Strasser first meets Humphrey Bogart, who plays Rick Blaine, who happens to run a saloon in a casino? Strasser asks, "May I ask you a few questions? Unofficially, of course." Rick replies, "Make it official if you like." Then he asks, "What is your nationality?" Rick thinks a moment and says, "I'm a drunkard." Captain Renault, who is also at the table, adds, "And that makes Rick a citizen of the world." But you see what Strasser was trying to do by asking that question? He wanted to know where Rick was from, so he could pigeonhole him into his preconceived ideas of people from different places. Hitler's Germany was notorious for that. But Rick was too smart. His nationality was a drunkard. Our readings today invite us to transcend our own preconceived notions of people and places, and even our own preconceived ideas of God. That is, try to avoid pigeonholing. In the first reading from 2 Kings, Naaman, who is from Syria, is cured of leprosy by the prophet Elisha. And what does Naaman want as a memento of the miracle? He asks for 2 mule loads of earth. He explains why, saying, I will no longer offer holocaust or sacrifice to any other god except to the Lord. In other words, Naaman mistakenly concludes that God is somehow closely associated with a certain place, the land of Israel, symbolized by the dirt. And so he wants to take some of that land back with him. He still has to learn that, like Rick Blaine, God does not have a nationality. He doesn't belong to any nation. Rather, all nations belong to him. Indeed, as it says in Isaiah 40, verse 15, see, the nations count as a drop in the bucket, as a wisp of cloud on the scales. The coastlands weigh no more than powder. You know, it's great to sing, God bless America, but he also blesses other countries, especially India. Try not to tie God down to two mule loads of earth. In the gospel, Jesus shows that his lordship is not limited to the land of Israel or to the people of Israel. He crosses into Samaria, a pagan territory, and he heals 10 lepers to highlight how Jesus heals even the non-Jews. The only one who returns to say thanks is a Samaritan, a foreigner. This shocked the Jews, who believed they had exclusive dibs on God, and his miracles should only be performed inside their borders. You see, God's love, embodied in Jesus, is bigger than any border. It is in this context that I would like to say a word about racism, especially as we hear reports about white police officers shooting black citizens, and the protests and the riots that ensue. Here are three things to pray about and to ponder over in these situations. First, racism is a sin. It is a sin. It is a failure to see another person as a child of God. When you hear about a police shooting, do you jump to conclusions? In your mind, have you played the roles of judge, jury, and executioner without having the facts or based on what you hear on social media? Do you have a bias and believe that all African Americans are guilty until proven innocent instead of the other way around? Or do you believe that police officers tend to be more brutal against blacks than whites? Beware of the biases in your own heart. And if you do see it there, go to confession. Why? Because racism is a sin. Secondly, be careful about believing that God loves America more than the rest of the world. For sure, God loves the United States, and he has blessed us tremendously. But look at it this way. If you are a parent and you have two healthy children and one child with special needs and severe disabilities, to whom will you give extra time, more attention, added affection? Of course, you will lavish your love on the more needy child. And you'd hope that the other siblings, the healthy ones, would not get jealous, but rather pitch in and help. Similarly, God's heart and grace are poured out upon the whole world, but especially where his children are most in need. Like the Jews, we should not be jealous because God is not bound inside our borders, but rather see how we can help the needy and the neglected. And thirdly, ask yourself, what would Jesus do in the face of racism, of bias, of bigotry? Well, we have his example in healing the foreigner in the gospel today. But the church also speaks out. In 1979, the United States bishops wrote a document on racism called Brothers and Sisters to Us. In it, they said very eloquently, the new form of racism must be brought to face with the figure of Christ. It is Christ's words that is the judgment on this world. It is Christ's cross that is the measure of our response. And it is Christ's face that is the composite of all persons, but in a most significant way of today's poor, today's marginal people, today's minorities. In other words, try to see racism through Jesus' eyes and feel it with his heart. Not the Jesus of your imagination, but the Jesus of the Bible and the Jesus that the church teaches. Retired Bishop John H. Ricard, the president of the National Black Catholic Congress, said it well when he remarked, "Blacks experience and see racism everywhere. Whites look at blacks and say, 'What's your problem?' Do you see racism everywhere? Or do you think it's not a problem? Before you answer that question, remember what some people think about the people from Fort Smith." Praise be Jesus Christ.